All right. Welcome once again to the Liberty Lounge podcast. I'm Johnny B. However y'all found us, we're glad that you did. To my left is Jared of Guns and Gadgets pointing at the masses. And out in California is my favorite lawyer, Anthony, the armed scholar. All right. The show is going to peak right now. This is my favorite thing. It's going to be downhill from here. Did you see this numbskull in Memphis, Tennessee? Oh, geez. His name is Reginald Cook. And he, oh, this is so good. He held up a Shell gas station with a 5-foot snake. The guy goes in, buys something, leaves, comes back with a snake around his neck. And by all accounts, there's no video out yet. He holds the snake out, the head of the snake out like a gun, like freaking Indiana Jones, and demands all of the cash. His hand is rummaging around in his backpack, and he pulls out a rock and a railroad spike. And then the owner of the gas station pulls out a gun, points it at him, and says, no dice. Reginald went to jail. Jared, dumbest crook ever?
Quite possibly, although I am considering changing my EDC when I go to different states. That's hilarious. Do we know what kind of snake yet? I couldn't find
it. I think it was like a ball python or something like that. It was definitely a ball python, a pet, the normal pet snake. It wasn't like a local water moccasin. I think it's fantastic. Anthony, are the criminals in Tennessee dumber than the criminals in California?
I don't know. That's a pretty let's pin them against each other and see what they bring to the fight, because we know Memphis is bringing railroad spikes, rocks, and snakes. What's over a carry permit for a snake?
Over on the Warrior Poet Network yesterday, I was cracking really quality jokes. I'm like, all right, rock beats paper, or paper beats rock, and rock beats scissors. Scissors beats paper. Gun beats snake in the old gunfight. Never bring a snake to the gunfight. I love this story. There's nothing. Like, I did a video on it yesterday. The video was 90 seconds. That's it. That's the whole story. Reginald Cook is in jail because he tried to rob a store with a snake. That's it. That's the whole story. And the episode is going to go downhill from here. Jared, what is going on with 80% Arms? Get me up to date. Get all of us up to date.
Yeah, I'm going to tag Anthony on this as well. So there's a couple things going on. But most recent, they settled their case with California, which is big. California was suing them, saying that they were violating their laws on ghost guns. And California is Anthony's arena, so I'll bounce this to him in a second. But they spent $2.5 million in this litigation. And ultimately what they did was they protected their customers' information. So they kept everybody's names private, which was what California was after, because they wanted to go after those individual people and charge them. So it cost them $2.5 million. They ultimately settled for $500,000, and they are now restarting to sell again items in California as long as they abide by the California legislation and stuff like that. Anthony, as a resident of California, you and I both have dealt with 80% Arms, great people over there. Yeah. What's your take on this as a resident?
I mean, it's awesome. I always appreciate, I mean, California's had so many issues with doxing gun owners. I mean, and when I say doxing us, it's hard to really say that, because California has a lot of our information already as gun owners in California, with the multitude of registries that we already have in place when we purchase firearms, and background checks for ammunition, and our CCW process. So they already have a lot of our information, and they've accidentally released it multiple times, including
accidentally,
air quotes, according to the Attorney General and DOJ and all them. Hey, it was a complete accident that they've done it two or three times, you know, releasing CCW permit holder information, all that. But I really appreciate it. Like Jared said, the people over 80% Arms are absolutely amazing. They don't get a lot of the shine that they should for a lot of these lawsuits that they're a part of. They don't have to necessarily do a lot of this. I mean, there are other companies that deal in unfinished frames and receivers, or firearms precursor parts, like California calls them, that haven't done this, haven't taken the hard stance of not releasing information to Cal DOJ. As far as California's laws, which I know Jared kind of alluded to, we have the firearm precursor part laws here in California, where now, they treat unfinished frames and receivers, 80%ers, polymer 80s, whatever, they treat them as actual firearms. So when we purchase them, we have to run background checks on them and all that, and they have to be serialized to be sold to us and all that nonsense. So, you know, you have the federal laws that we're dealing with right now with the ATF, or not laws, federal rules that the ATF has put in place right now with their unfinished frames and receivers rule. And then you have California, which has gone the extra mile and has even beforehand put in place their restrictions on all these. So I love 80% arms is awesome. They've been hit hard by all of these different state laws and federal rules. I've talked to a lot of their marketing people and, you know, they've lost employees because, you know, these states and federal government have actively attacked their business. So they've lost employees. They've had to downsize and, you know, they're hit hard by it. So I appreciate that not only after the fact they continue to fight this and put $2.5 million into litigation, that for everybody who asks, you know, why aren't more lawsuits filed, yada, yada, yada. Look at this one company, what they had to pay just to eventually reach a settlement where they only got $500,000. So,
right. Plus, I mean, let's call a spade a spade. These states are trying to sue these companies out of business. That's what they're mm-hmm. doing. So these companies, they got to put money out of pocket for their attorneys to fight. They're going to lose that whatever amount of revenue they brought in from California. That stops immediately. And then they lose the ability to have employees, which affects, you know, families, moms, dads. And it also affects us from other states when we order this stuff because they don't have the ability to fill it quick.
Yeah, I think it's tough to be a company in 2024, obviously, because you have the entire Department of Justice, the entire everything inside the beltway of Washington, D.C. against your very existence. And companies span, in my opinion, companies span a big continuum of some companies are just going to sell product. There's other companies that we talked about last week in that they actively within their state and on the federal level, they're part of lawsuits. And then you have this other orbiting set of companies. They have to fight for their very existence to even sell inanimate objects. And it's tough. Then you have the federal government asking them for their client list. You've got the credit card companies arguing with their nonsense. This, I think, dovetails in really nicely with the next story. It comes out of Buffalo, New York. In 2022, y'all remember the Tops grocery store shooting. It was a racially motivated shooting. A lot of folks died. And then the Giffords Law Group got together and they, on behalf of the victims, the short version is this. Happened in 2022. In 2024, the Giffords Group and this big lawsuit is suing YouTube and Reddit because they helped, quote unquote, radicalize the shooter. Now, Coleon Noir has talked at length about this, how he says this is going to be having parallels or a proxy war that's headed towards the gun industry. Jared, they're coming not just for us, and this is not hype, the sky is falling. This is reality, black and white. They're not just coming for us. They're not just coming for our freedoms. They are also coming after the platforms that we use to talk about firearms.
Oh, absolutely. And I'll go one step further. We've noticed here in the last couple of days, YouTube has been turning off entire comment sections for a lot of people in the industry. And some of the folks in our circles did some digging, and YouTube told one of our people that they've done this for tens of millions of channels. Mm-hmm. Not tens of millions of videos, channels. So they're, I mean, it just so happens to be an election coming up too. So that's going to increase, the scrutiny is going to increase. They hate us. They hate everything about us. And they constantly are trying to have whatever avenues we have to get information out. Although there's a thing called the First Amendment, maybe.
There was a First Amendment. Yeah. Rest in peace.
Yeah. Yeah. Anthony, have you had any issues with your comment sections being turned off? I haven't yet, but I've got about 12 phone calls yesterday from people.
I haven't, but I've gotten a giant text string of, we're all in the same group text. We've seen a ton of guys who've had issues, and I got maybe 5 or 6 independent just text messages, people asking me what's going on. Again, with YouTube, you have zero clarity. Like, people who think that we have any idea what's going on with YouTube, they tell us nothing, and they will never tell us nothing, and we will like it, is what they tell us. You just deal with it, pretty much. As far as going after certain industries or going after YouTube for not regulating certain industries, it's not anything new. It's happened multiple times. There was a very famous Supreme Court case recently that was heard in regards to Google and some of these other sites needing to moderate content. And I think that one, I can't remember the specific case. I think maybe that one was like in relation to the Orlando nightclub, potentially radicalizing certain people because there was, you know, terrorist organizations that were promoting stuff online and that this person had watched and potentially had radicalized him. And so they were trying to put the onus on Google to control that content. So that's something that's been argued, but now they're just trying to do that to the gun world on YouTube. And they've tried this multiple times. We've seen letters to Congress. We've seen members of Congress push back against that. You know, there was multiple times when we had like Adpocalypse on YouTube where they tried to shut down all that stuff for certain content. It, so it just, it goes in cycles, and it seems like it always. Yeah, that Jared.
You could do really well.
Golden years. Yeah, before all that. So it goes in cycles. It happens all the time. And it's, like I said, nothing new. They do it on social media. And then you also have them attack, you know, the industry itself, trying to pierce the PLCAA and go after gun manufacturers. So it's just another kind of play in their playbook.
People say all the time, hey guys, why are y'all even on YouTube? Now this show.
Oh yes, let's address this. Let's address this.
We're headed. Some of y'all are watching this on YouTube right now, but it's going to be out in on podcasts and a lot of different on audio in a lot of different podcast areas. But the three of us, our primary bread and butter, the tool that we use, it's just a tool. We are a guest here, is YouTube. And nonstop, every time something happens, whether it's Adpocalypse or what we're going with right now with all of the comments deleting, there is always a small group of folks that nonstop say, what do they say, Jared? What do the viewers say?
Why don't you just go to Rumble?
Go to Rumble.
Go to Rumble. You should start uploading on Rumble.
Go to Rumble. Now, we're not against another platform. Believe me, bring on another platform. I would love another platform. We've tried it. There was a thing called YouTube back in the day, the Utah Gun Exchange. They stole every video that I have and re-uploaded it without permission, and I had to send them an invoice to get them to take it down. YouTube was a scam. That dude's in federal prison.
Yes.
And there's a whole bunch of other ones have tried. None of them are going to make it. None of them have the power of Google. Jared, why are we not, just to answer and get it out there, we want somewhere else. Find us somewhere else to go. We'll go. Number two, Jared, why does it not work?
Well, the fact that we get that question so often proves the point. And the point is nobody is watching Rumble for our content.
How long have you been on Rumble?
4 years.
And how many people have found you over there?
Three. I don't know. It's everybody who asks that, they don't, first off, don't look on Rumble.
They're not on Rumble
because we're there. But I'll give you a quick story. This just happened in a little email I got from Rumble. I had stopped the tool where they automatically port every video you make right over to their platform to save you time.
It's scraping.
It's a great tool, so you don't have to go through the whole process over and over and over. Well, I had looked through it and like YouTube is a business for me. A lot of people don't like that, but I've turned this into a business for all of us. It's a business, right? Because we do all the work of getting all the information and the research. It takes time and time is money. So if I take time away from my family, then I treat it like a business.
The idea that you had to stop right there and justify the fact that your time is valuable and that you monetize your day-to-day life, I think that right there is a small litmus test of what we deal with and Anthony deals with on a day-to-day basis, that we have to justify the fact that we monetize and that we believe our time is worth something and that culture is out there. And I think it's sad that you have to stop and say that. The links are below. If you want to click anything, wherever you're finding us, we have plenty of links. We are trying to feed our families.
Well, I mean, just look at across the board, every place you can consume content, nothing is free, folks. It might be on air, you know, over the air TV, but there's commercials because they need to pay bills. It's the same for everybody. But so I stopped the porting to Rumble, and then their editor reached out to me. He's like, hey, dude, why did you turn that off? Because, you know, we enjoy having you on the platform. And I said, well, no, nobody sees my stuff. How do you really enjoy that? I said, plus, I don't understand your monetization. I've made $13 in 5 years. It's not worth me.
Literally $13 in 5 years?
$13.50 something. It's not a lot of money.
Yeah.
But it's not, actually, it might be over 100 now. I think it was 13 per year, whatever. It's not a lot of money, though. It's not even enough for me to take it out. But like, if you want any, like, I love that it's a conservative platform. I love it. I love that those conservative.
We're not against it 100%. At all.
We need it. And the fact that like my friend Sebastian Gorka's over there and he's crushing it over. That's good. Dan Bongino's crushing it because they're being deplatformed everywhere else. And that's phenomenal. But they don't drive. There's no algorithm there. So if there's no way for you to even throw up a flag and say, hey, I exist here.
unless, you know, the powers that be want you to be successful. And then I said, you know, I don't understand your revenue stream, your sharing. Nobody understands it. So help me explain it. And he just said that I went through it and now you're now fully monetized. And then said, well, I thought I was before. So it's just, and that's all platforms.
That they're not ready for prime time. And for the 13th time, like we're all for it. And people will say, hey, Anthony, if you would just go over there, then the masses will be there. We're all like, we've been over there. Nobody is there. And I think it's fantastic that people are on YouTube banging away, telling you not to be on YouTube. And I'm like, dude, that's where you are. At least for the time being, Anthony, am I wrong? At least for the time being, YouTube will remain the dominant platform.
Yeah, YouTube is the dominant platform. Whether we like it or anybody likes it, it is the dominant platform. It has dominated the social media game, and it's growing by like a billion users every single year. They always send out their reports after every year, and they're growing faster than any other. The only one that was kind of catching it was TikTok. But yeah, it is frustrating, and this is a lot of inside baseball stuff and conversations we have and conversations we've had over the last couple of days with this whole comment thing. With other creators, I was talking with Reno. Me and him had this very conversation back and forth because he had an email chain or a Twitter exchange with some people, and me and him were talking about it. And it is very frustrating to get those comments like, why don't you guys just go over to Rumble? When, like, Jared, I've been over to Rumble. I've been in Rumble for 5 years, 4 years, however long I've been making my videos on YouTube, they automatically upload over to Rumble. Now, that's not necessarily true anymore, because just to prove how not ready for prime time Rumble is, and I know Reno mentioned this in one of our group texts, I've had the same issue where suddenly, magically, out of nowhere, Rumble stopped automatically porting my videos. So whenever I would upload a video on YouTube, it would no longer go over to Rumble. And then they created a copycat channel of mine over on Rumble. So then I had two accounts. And so they just stopped organically uploading my videos. So even the features that they have to get our videos over there isn't working, not in, and let alone their monetization and their general reach. And it's not even just about money. If we, there are plenty of places where I post where we get absolutely $0, like right. Zero, not even a cent. Instagram, all Twitter, all these other places.
And I we're post, happy get, to do it. That's not the point. We're happy to do it all day.
The point is, if it reaches you guys, I'm all for it. I get more reach over on Instagram and Facebook than I do on Rumble. So that should be big, you know, red flags, alarms that, hey, maybe Rumble isn't all what it's being cut out to say. And you guys will look at people like Russell Brand or Bongino and all these guys and like, well, they're getting hundreds and thousands, millions of views. Well, yeah, because they signed these fat $1 million contracts with Rumble a year. And of course, Rumble has an interest of primarily just pushing them in front of every single, it's like the Mr. Beast effect. Like, of course, YouTube has an interest of pushing Mr. Beast to every single person on YouTube because he's their number one guy. Right. And they make millions and millions of dollars off of him. And there's probably millions of people that wouldn't watch the platform, but for Mr. Beast. So yeah. it's the reality. And again, a lot of inside baseball stuff, but you know, it is frustrating to see those because, hey, I'm over on Rumble. I still continue to post on Rumble. I will always post on Rumble, but it just, nobody watches, maybe five people.
And to be clear, the reason I mentioned the monetization, because I had that conversation with the editor, is because that's how they were luring us.
Yeah,
that's how they wanted the 2A community over there. They're like, hey, our monetization is second to none. Come on over. And it's just what they offered us. And it just didn't play out.
Yeah, I think a couple things. One, that whole y'all are paid shills. And that's a whole conversation for another day. One person started that. And I can remember a friend of mine.
He's a paid shill, too.
He is a paid shill as well. But he said, you know, all the YouTube guys get paid. And as does he. And I remember a friend of mine one time who's not in this industry said, what is up with y'all in the freedom industry? I've never heard of viewers banging on their keyboards going, wow, you showed us a commercial. And I think it's interesting. I think one person who is a leftist piece of crap, or to quote Napoleon Dynamite, a decroded piece of crap, started that. The second thing I think for, you know, Anthony mentioned this inside baseball. Sure, we love talking the nuts and bolts of social media. I think for all of y'all, like viewers and people that just consume hanging out with the constitutional loving folks, I think we're staying at YouTube for at least a time being. I think there's a lot going on Telegram and some other places. I love Instagram. It's dying, but I love it. But I think YouTube is where it's at. We're guests here, and the platform works terribly good. It's fast. You click that button, it starts playing. It is a great tool. And I can remember at Bible school, there was a a Christian professor. He talked about raiding Babylon because somebody said that, you know, you're going into church and you're using the video medium or something. They were using something they'd gotten from the rock and roll world. And he goes, no, we're going to Babylon. We're still in their technology and we're going to use it. The parallel for me is YouTube hates freedom and we're going to use their technology against them. I don't know if that's too dramatic, but I like it. All right, Anthony, we've met some famous people. That's really, really fun. There's been some doors open in the through this, what we're doing right here. We've met a lot of people. Anthony, who's one of the coolest people you have met in doing media?
I mean, there's a lot of people from big names to small names. I think the biggest like pinch me moment that I've had recently was when I got to meet The Undertaker. And my little child that grew up watching WWE was
Atomic Elbow.
Dude, I was internally just be cool, guy. Be cool, man. Be cool. So that was one of those really, really fun ones. But a lot of people, I've got to meet a lot of people and I've got to build some awesome relationships with companies and that I never thought I would have opportunities to work with. And yeah, it's The Undertaker is just the one that sticks out because that's probably the most recent one where I was like, oh, crap.
If you go professional wrestling, you have got my heart. For me, I'm driving down the road one day, minding my own business. And I was a big fan when it first came out, the show Forged in Fire on the History or Discovery Channel, whichever channel. And I remember Jason Knight, the knife maker, and he sends me a DM. He goes, I love your stuff, man. And I went, hang on, is this the Jason Knight? He said, yeah, why don't we hang out, man? And I said, next time I'm in Charleston, I'll hang out with you. And he goes, I live in Kingsport, man. And I went the next day and spent 8 hours with the guy. And we're now, and we're the three best friends that anyone could ever have. So that's great. You've got The Undertaker. I've got Jason Knight. We are all in the shadow of Jared of Guns and Gadgets this day. Jared, who started following you on Twitter? This is ridiculous.
Representative Thomas Massey. Which is pretty cool because I think they're a small handful, in my opinion, small handful of people in Congress and in the Senate who are trying to do the right thing when it comes to the Second Amendment.
Maybe about five. And he's in the top three of those five.
Yeah, he's about as based as it gets. He sends out his Christmas card every year with him holding machine guns and the family holding machine guns. And he makes a fool and a mockery of the anti-gunners any chance he gets when they're talking about how, you know, this bump stock turns it into full auto.
That's a pistol brace, bro.
He's just somebody that I've enjoyed watching doing what I do, and he started following me last night.
Yeah, and didn't he click like on one of your posts or something?
Yeah, he liked the post I made about him.
Can you make us a promise right now? Remember the little people when you get to the top, Jared.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Hanging out with Thomas Massey. I absolutely love it. All right, the question is, are things changing in this country? We fight. Y'all fight. We have viewers out there that are in the trenches fighting in America. They're going to be sitting this weekend with their bros and just in the grassroots way saying, hey, the Constitution is worth fighting for. Are things changing? I've got some interesting news coming out of New York. One report from Newsmax says that Trump has a good chance of winning New York. Those are strong, strong words, but that's an idea. This one, not an idea. The labor unions are starting to comment that they cannot vote for the first time ever, vote for that pedophile. New York union leader Bobby Bartels, he's from Steamfitters Local 638. How was my New York accent there, Jared?
Way off.
Okay, he's from the Steamfitters Local 638, and he came out and just banged to the camera and said that this guy is ruining America. We cannot support this guy. And he said this, his quote, Democrats are basically pushing everybody to the other side, close quote. Here's my comment, and my question for you all is, what was the straw that broke the Steamfitters' back? My guess, I didn't make this up, there was a commenter on Reddit said this. They said, everybody's been sort of okay with letting it be the way it is, destroy America, until they brought in hundreds of thousands of migrants, illegal aliens coming in and it's ruining New York City, and even the unions are pushing back, Jared.
Yeah, it's a huge part of it because they're getting undercut by people who shouldn't even be in here in the country. But I think, as you know, I love my horsepower cars. I love fast cars. I think that, you know, a lot of the automobile industry and the unions are reacting to it. They're losing a lot because of this push towards electric vehicles. Look what Stellantis, like Dodge. I'm a Dodge guy. I have Durango, Charger, Challenger. I love them.
You're such a Dodge guy, you even avoided the draft. He didn't avoid the draft, to be clear, people. No. Do not leave a comment.
I actually was in the United States Navy. They see what these Democrat policies have led to. It's actually here now, and they're losing. I mean, who wants to buy a car that doesn't work in the winter? If you tow something with it, you lose 70% of your range. I've had a couple of electric cars. I had Tesla, and of all of them, they're probably the best, and they still have work to do.
Anthony, let me ask you this. Jared says it's this push towards electric that is ruining work for the unions. They know it's ruining the economy. I'm saying in part it was the push towards illegal aliens coming in and just taking up hotels and doing the nonsense, and we flood them with cash. Anthony, what is one of these straws that broke the steam fitters back?
I think it's a little bit of everything. I think the immigration is a big, big part right now. It's funny, going into any election, you always have the big talking points, the big issues, you know, the economy, immigration, foreign policy. It's hard to say that there's one specific thing when he gets F grades on every single one of the major issues. And I think maybe one in isolation would have been good enough for the left to put up with. But when every single one, you know, your foreign policy with wars going on in Ukraine and the Middle East now, with us having to send millions of dollars over there and billions and trillions of dollars, recently more billions of dollars, you have that. And then on top of that, our economy is doing absolutely horrible and people are feeling that. And usually that also could be on its own enough when people are feeling it at the gas station, when they're feeling it when they go to the store to buy milk and eggs and all this other stuff. Prices are insane. Inflation is high. People can't buy houses because the interest rates. That would be enough. But then you have immigration and having to deal with that. And we're here. I don't know where I saw this, but they were talking about fights going on in the parking lot of Home Depots between, you know, different groups of immigrants, Venezuelans and people from Mexico, because they're fighting for jobs because the immigration policy has been such a drastic shift. So it's hard to say that there's one specific thing. I mean, foreign policy is a big thing because I think that's kind of an existential crisis that's looming out there of what is the next 4 years going to look like under this administration, because he's already got us pretty deeply involved into chaos on two different fronts in Europe and now the Middle East. And
so far,
that's the point. So, I mean, you could point to that, but I think it's a little bit of everything.
I'm going to push back on what you said, and you said it several times, immigration. I've got no problem with immigration. What we're seeing now is a foreign invasion, and that's a problem. Like, we need you. There's a lot of holes that we have that need to be filled, and we've got some age issues. Like, there's some stuff with different demographics where we need to fill some holes in America. I get that, and there's some technology stuff we need to fill. That's not a problem. Come take the class. Raise your hand. Dolph Lundgren, now an American. He swore an oath.
Yeah, we're all for lawful immigration. We're not against open borders and like you said, an invasion of not just one country, of multiple countries, of against people who do not have the U.S.'s best interests in mind, who actively want to hurt us. It's more of an open border policy than any actual immigration policy.
Dolph Lundgren, is he coming over as Dolph now, or is he going to be Drago?
I just like the fact that Rocky wins in the end. Like, Rocky's won, and Drago, USSR, the Iron Curtain has fallen. All right, Jared, I need you to comment on this as a law enforcement officer. We have talked a little bit in here about body cams. We've talked a little bit about no-knock raids. And there was a story that came out last month in Arkansas at the Bill and Hillary Clinton National Airport. The head cheese there, his name's Brian Malinowski. He was doing some bonehead stuff. Now, to be clear, every rule, not law, rule that comes from the ATF is a pile of steaming garbage. And Brian Malinowski was breaking their rules, not their laws. And it's a problem. According to the ATF, he was buying a lot of guns and selling them. He was buying new guns and then filling out a 4473, then selling them at gun shows for cash. Two were used in crimes, and that doesn't make Brian a criminal with those crimes. But with the gun shows, it was a problem. So the ATF shows up at his house last month, and they come in, they pop him in the head. We find out this week, this just came out, that the ATF were not wearing body cams. How big of a problem is that?
Well, I did a video on this too when it came out, and I got their policy and put it up so everybody could see it. The problem is that the policy is written with an out. The policy says that they may wear body cams. So they obviously chose not to, because why would they want to film the assassination of a law, you know, a law-abiding American who just violated ATF rules, which aren't laws? It does say that they should wear body cams when they're doing search warrants and stuff like that with task force operations, but they didn't. And all we have is his Ring cam, which they decided to put a piece of tape over, as well as the cross.
How do they justify that? Because this is a pretty
standard operating procedure.
Thank you, Anthony, out in California. Standard operating procedure, the SOP, is to put a piece of tape over the Ring cam. I know why they do that, but how do they justify taping over a camera on the front porch?
So tactically, it's an officer safety issue where if the guy the bad guy, if there was a real bad guy, I mean, this guy was buying guns and selling them and they didn't like that. But if there is, let's say, a violent criminal who's maybe holed up inside with a firearm threatening to kill people, if I can look on my screen and see that, you know, two guys are right outside my living room window, well, that's where I'm going to go because they're right there. They can't see me and I know where they are. So that's why they use it. It's for officer safety as far as tactics, so that you don't know where they are. That's all.
Anthony, where are you at with this legally? The guy was breaking ATF rules. We get that. None of us can stand the ATF. And then he's assassinated in his house. What's going to happen from here? Will they ever go to trial for this? Or are they going to hold a group meeting where they say no wrongdoing?
Well, I don't know if he was actually technically breaking any rules. It just they didn't like what he was doing and they wanted to gain more information. As far as if anything will actually happen to any of these ATF agents, no, they're going to claim qualified immunities and all that, and nothing's ever going to happen to them.
Well, the state police is investigating at the request of ATF. However, whenever they find whatever their findings are, they will forward it to a state prosecutor to decide if there will be charges at all. We're all on the same page. Like, you know, nothing's going to happen to these clowns, right? LaVoy Finicum and everybody that was at Waco, and you can just, the list keeps going and going. Ruby Ridge, you can just keep going and going. But yeah, nothing's going to happen.
Yeah. And as far as them not wearing body cams, they'll just claim like, hey, we had this, like Jared said, this loose policy. It was the field office practice that we didn't actually ever wear body cams. They could say stuff like that. They don't even have to point to it as an independent decision on that specific, you know, situation or that day when they went out. They can just claim like, hey, just our general policy was that it was an open question whether we wore body cams or not. We didn't. And the ATF, I'm sure their agents don't want them, because every time we see them do anything out in the field, they're recorded and they look absolutely stupid and they're doing something they shouldn't be doing. And then it gets blasted all over the internet all the time.
Today's episode is brought to you by the Liberty Lounge section of blackoutcoffee.com. I'm so excited about this. blackoutcoffee.com/liberty, and you can load your mailbox up with all sorts of awesome possum caffeine. I drink it every day. Hey, my favorite, and I don't care, judge me all you want, is blueberry crumble. Anthony, what's your current favorite?
The two I always use, the 7076 and then the GOA No Compromise. Those are
the
two.
Nothing else. He is consistent. It's blackoutcoffee.com/liberty. Use the code Liberty for 20% off your first order. Hey, big thank you to the folks at Blackout Coffee.
We have a very limited edition that we just put out for sale. If folks who are listening or watching might remember, about 5-6 days ago, the Commander-in-Chief alluded to the fact that his uncle, Bozy, was eaten by cannibals after he was shot down in Papua New Guinea.
Cannibal Bland.
Jack.
We had just gotten a shipment of coffee beans from Papua New Guinea.
No.
Just enough to do a special limited roast that we just put out today called Uncle Bozy's Brew.
There's no way this is real.
It's real. In fact, the screen, the picture's going to be on your screen right now, blackoutcoffee.com/liberty.
I'm not being incredulous for fun. I had no idea this was going on.
And our roaster, my roaster today told me that it's phenomenal. So hopefully we can keep getting beans from it.
Okay. I said at the beginning that the guy holding up the holding up the gas station with the snake was peak level for me. I don't know if there really is. I don't know. We'll see. And like, he's like, there's going to be a graphic right there. Yeah. That's all done in post-production. Like, I don't know if this is real. I'm going to be watching with y'all. I think that's absolutely hilarious. All right. Y'all, we're talking a minute ago about Waco and all that jazz. This is a fun one. So I get an email from Troy Industries. If y'all don't know Troy Industries, they make a lot of stuff. One thing they make are really good iron sights. Like, I really like them. They're really well done. But years ago, they hired one of the shooters from Ruby Ridge. He might have been a spotter.
Spotter, yeah.
And that's a problem. So I get an email in from their marketing director, and the marketing director's like, blah, 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 Johnny. And so I just responded, hey, Dan, do you all still have in your employment one of the, I said one of the criminals from Ruby Ridge, ? That's fun. That's almost as fun as Bozy Coffee. So I'm in on all of the above. Jared, what's pissing you off these days?
We have one of us that was just jammed up in New York for building his own firearms, for having a gunsmith hobby, and New York threw the book at him.
Dexter Taylor,
facing 13 years, a ton of stuff he was indicted for on Monday last week. So last week or this week? This week, Monday. And what really got me pissed off is the judge in this case. There was actually two judges over this case. One of them, her last name was Darkeh, D-A-R-K-E-H. She had the balls to say that do not bring the Second Amendment up as a defense in this case. The Second Amendment does not exist here. This is New York. Wait, what? Like, what? So I think that's prime for a challenge to a nice little federal court, because this judge, not only should she be disbarred, but she should be stoned for what she said.
I love that you said that she's got the balls, and immediately my brain said, it's ma'am.
Probably does.
It is ma'am. Anthony, where does this end? Like we got people in the court of law saying, oh, the Second Amendment doesn't exist here. It's ma'am. Where does this end? I know when stuff actually gets to the Supreme Court, and you know this better than all of us put together, when stuff gets to the Supreme Court, things actually go pretty well for freedom. But how do you have somebody in a courtroom rattling things like the Second Amendment doesn't exist?
It's frustrating, and when I hear stuff like that and I see stuff like that, it makes me want to pull my hair out. It's hard to also listen to sometimes these oral arguments. And this is not something that's isolated just to New York. I want to make that very clear. This is not one rogue judge. There are multiple rogue judges in multiple states and multiple circuit courts who have made statements, very express statements similar to this. I mean, the Hawaii State Supreme Court, who said that the Aloha spirit trumps the Second Amendment. You know, we don't have a tradition here in the state of Hawaii, you know, believing in firearms, and that trumps the Second Amendment. California and a lot of the judges in California, state and federal judges, are of the same opinion. I mean, we listened to oral arguments recently in the Ninth Circuit on magazine bans, and you had a lot of federal judges there sitting on that panel who were asking questions about why does XYZ apply? Why do we have to consider, you know, this as far as common use or certain intent? And it's like, well, because that's what the Second Amendment says, and that's what our Constitution says. That's what our Bill of Rights says, and that's what also the Supreme Court has said. So yeah, it's not isolated to just what this one judge. You would, like Jared said, you would think that is something absolutely ripe for a challenge to say that the Second Amendment does not apply in a courtroom in the United States is a very ballsy, ma'am, it's ma'am statement. Yeah, it's unfortunate, but that's also why I would try to warn a lot of people too. If you're in these liberal, progressive, left-leaning states where you have a lot of these activist judges. And don't get it mistaken. There are activist judges who will do, and prosecutors and people that will try to do everything in their power to put you in jail for the rest of your life. Don't think that the Second Amendment is always just gonna protect you. It should, but you have these rogue judges that will do absolutely anything to keep you in jail, including making crazy statements like that should disqualify them from sitting on the bench. So
all of this, you're ma'am and talking about the ballsy women, it's almost like you people are not inclusive. Shame on y'all, and also shame on Anthony for talking about pulling his hair out to two bald guys. Nothing makes me feel more secure about myself.
I think I should do it.
Then that, Anthony, join the club.
Come to the dark.
I'll have to get a lot of hair. I'll have to get rid of a lot of it. There's so all much right. of it.
Speaking of non-inclusivity, Mitch McConnell doesn't like including your money in America. He has argued, Mitch McConnell, the moron out of Kentucky, says this, that $61 billion with a B dollars sent to the Ukraine is, quote, not a whole lot of money. Yeah, it's not his money, but it's his to get away. How big are the kickbacks he's getting, Jared?
They have to be huge because that guy's terrible. He sucks. So in order for him to get that to go through, he's got to be very well taken care of on the backside.
It's interesting. They've been in lockstep. I mean, they're literally cheering and waving flags from another country. The kickbacks have got to be significant for them to all be pushing in the same direction. $61 billion. And what the challenge is this, and I do a lot of work with people in critical studies and critical thinking. And one of the challenges of critical thinking, when you talk about these, the human brain cannot differentiate or bifurcate between million and billion. We just throw that word billion out there. The difference is so astronomical. 61 million is a lot. But then you throw the B in there, it is a significant amount of money. And he's, it's not a lot of money.
I saw something last night as I was scrolling before the Z's came into my eyes. Ukraine in Kiev, the capital, the nightlife scene, there are more entertainment spots, bars, and restaurants today during a war than there were before the war. So you really have to question what's going on with this money, because it's not accounted for. We're paying for retirements for their military. The oligarchs have ginormous boats, stuff that we used to get on Russians oligarchs about. It's just,
Did you guys see that interview? I think it was Gates, where he was questioning the Marine commander or the general. I don't know what it, and no. He was saying, he was asking, hey, what could you do with $61 billion if I gave this to you, the Marine Corps? And I think it ended up coming out to $61 billion was two or three times the budget of the U.S. Marines. So we are sending two or three times the cost to fund our own, the Marines, the United States Marines. Like, we could have three Marine Corps for what they're sending to the Ukraine. How does that make any sense?
Like, all at a time where our strategic oil reserves have been depleted and Biden has not put a drop of oil back into it. And I know somebody who works there, and those special tanks are designed to be filled to a certain capacity before they fall in on themselves. They kind of hold themselves up, and it's getting kind of dangerously low.
Strategic oil reserves are at the lowest of all time. The dollar is hanging by a thread and probably is going to collapse sooner than later. World War III about to happen. I saw a meme and it says, all this stuff's going on. What are you doing to prepare? And this guy goes, I'm saving a lot of memes into my phone. And I kind of feel the same way. I am saving the memes. Anthony, what's pissing you off these days?
I don't know. I kind of want to move away from, real quick, one thing that's pissing me off. Let's go to a positive. I think we got some good news this week that me and Jared and you guys need to talk about that we kind of brushed over real quick. We got some good news out of the Supreme Court, which is something positive and we're looking forward to. The Supreme Court has granted review to the Vanderstock versus Garland case, which deals with the ATF's unfinished frames and receivers rule. I know we've kind of mentioned and we've alluded to it a few times during this conversation. And it's relevant for not just the Dexter Taylor stuff, but the stuff coming out of California with the 80%er settlement. It's really good news. I don't want it all to be bad, bad, bad. you know, that's a positive thing that's developed this week that I'm excited for. I know a lot of people are very excited for. I had predicted that. I was pretty sure that they were going to take it just based on some of the emergency orders that they had issued prior and kind of back themselves into a little bit of a corner to where they would have to grant review to it, because ultimately there was no form of relief that any lower court could issue until the Supreme Court stepped in because of those orders that they had issued. So it's good news. It's going to, you know, awesome, you know, 80% Arms, Blackhawk Manufacturing Group is one of the plaintiffs in that case also. So huge props to them for being plaintiffs in that. Firearms Policy Coalition, I think Second Amendment Foundation is also in on that one. Tactical Machining is in that lawsuit. And there's probably one more that I'm forgetting. Do you Defense Distributed. And then there might be one more. So what did you think about that, Jared, when you saw that kind of pop up this week?
I knew inside, I kind of knew they had to do it because of everything that has been going on. But yeah, I was shocked when I saw the cert come. Honestly, yeah. When I saw a cert was issued, and for those who don't know the Supreme Court language, when they take up a case, they issue a writ of certiorari, which means we're taking it up. I was shocked because, you know, from what we talked about last week, where they decided how they're going to handle emergency requests to the court, I kind of thought that left a little bit of wiggle room for them, but...
So this is different because this isn't an emergency application. That's right. Why I was pretty certain this one would, because this is actually a final... I don't want to go into all the procedural stuff. This is coming off an actual final merits decision from the lower court.
This is it.
So this is it. And the Fifth Circuit, so the lower court ruled in our favor with the nationwide vacature of the rule, but that was a final merits. It wasn't a preliminary injunction. It was an actual final review of the case. And then the Fifth Circuit upheld all that, a three-judge panel. And then the ATF decided, like, hey, we're not going to be ballsy enough to take it to the Fifth Circuit en banc panel because we know we're going to lose. Let's just try to get a big win and go to the Supreme Court. So both, and the reason why we were also pretty sure they were going to grant reviews of this because the ATF was asking for Supreme Court review. They're the ones that filed the writ. And then all the plaintiffs were like, absolutely, yes, Supreme Court grant review to this. Let's handle this right now. And they had just granted review to the Cargill bump stock case. They've heard that. They're going to rule on that before the end of June. The Rahimi case is also supposed to be coming soon. So I think the one interesting thing that's going to develop is I think we're going to kind of get a hodgepodge of rulings.
Yeah,
I'm still very concerned about the Rahimi and the Cargill case. But as far as the Vandersaw case, I keep telling everybody this is a little bit more of a palatable issue for the Supreme Court, because with Cargill, that deals with what is a machine gun? You know, do these pieces of plastic bump stocks qualify as a machine gun to be regulated? And
no,
it doesn't. But it's hard to listen to sometimes, even the Supreme Court, when they're grappling with these cases. They're talking about rate of fire and how they function, and they just don't really know. And so they're so focused on rate of fire and how those things function, to where I think they're concerned that bump stocks are actual machine guns, not understanding it's a piece of plastic. But this case, I think, is a little bit more palatable. It deals with a person's fundamental ability to build and modify firearms, which has been of the American tradition since the nation was formed. Like, people have been able to build and modify and do what they need to do with their firearms privately without federal regulation or state regulation. So,
and I say numerous times on my channel when I'm discussing the Supreme Court, many, many scholars believe, and maybe even the Arms scholar, but this is the most pro-2A court we've ever had since the founding. And this June is going to be big. I mean, the liberals' hairs will be burning in June when they render these decisions. And come October, when this Vandersaw case is expected to be heard, they're going to lose their minds on that too. And if anybody out there has the interest, I always carry these major Supreme Court cases live on my channel. So if you want to see it there, it'll help keep you in. And Anthony has tremendous breakdowns on these cases. So if you're interested, we got you covered there. But I see some big wins coming here again.
Yeah, no, keep in mind, I know we focus so heavily on firearms, and that's a big, that's what, I mean, it's one of the, I don't want to say I'm a single issue voter, but it's a big issue to me when I vote. It's one of the main reasons why I voted for Trump. And I had arguments with one of my family members about why I was voting for Trump. And it was because I wanted Supreme Court justices like that are on the court right now. But they've been awesome for other issues outside of just the Second Amendment. They are attacking Chevron. You know, I have certain beliefs about abortion that I really enjoyed some of the rulings that they laid down recently. I mean, you might not like that, but, you know, I like those decisions. There's a lot of controversial conservative issues that the Supreme Court has grappled with, and they've come out in a way that I enjoy. And so I know a lot of people maybe don't have faith in the Supreme Court, but I think this is a pretty solid Supreme Court. You couldn't ask, I mean, you, I guess you could have certain better, if we had 9 Justice Thomases or a combination of 9 justice, you know, makeup of maybe like 4 Alitos and 5 Thomases, or maybe we'll get back a couple more Scalias or something like that. But I mean, yeah, the Supreme Court's awesome.
Need a whole lot of RV parking there.
Yeah, a lot of RV. I like the makeup right now. I have concerns about some of them. I mean, sometimes when I hear Kavanaugh and Barrett ask certain questions about some of these topics, they concern me sometimes. But they tend to come out the right way because I think they're forced the right way by the rest of the majority.
I think Amy Barrett probably should go ahead and get fitted for an eye patch, but what do I know? All right, some interesting news coming out of Tennessee. This is interesting. This week, lawmakers in Tennessee passed a measure that would allow school staff to carry concealed handguns on school grounds. Now, that's interesting. And a lot of times you hear about this bill or you hear about a Senate measure or a House measure. It's passed one but won't pass the other. This one has already passed the House and the Senate. It's now headed to Bill Lee's desk, the governor, to see if he's going to sign it. The House cleared it 68-28. So I would call it a landslide victory for some. The Giffords protesters sat or stood up in the gallery and whispered, "Blood on your hands, blood on your hands, blood on your hands." During the proceedings, Jared, is it a step in the right direction to, quote unquote, allow teachers to carry?
I think so. It's not mandatory carry. It's just people who want to keep their environment safe. And all indications from the governor's office was that he was going to sign it today, possibly. I think it's a step in the right direction. Utah teachers have been able to carry for years, and you have not had a mass shooting in a school where their teachers are carrying. So I think it's good. I mean, how else? Look, I dealt with this stuff for 24 years. How do you stop an immediate threat? It's with immediate action, not let's go wait. Let's hope someone comes.
Run, fight, and hide.
Let's wait, and maybe they'll only do half the wait that the Uvalde cops did. They'll just leave us halfway out there. Just take care of the situation when it needs to be taken care of.
One of the challenges with this one is that individuals that apply for this, they're going to conceal carry a handgun on their school grounds. They are going to be required to complete 40 hours of approved training per year. So a full week of your life every single year to be able to carry, because what's crazy is these same people, they're carrying up into the parking lot. They're carrying every other place that they're at. But when they change into a different building, they go do 40 hours. Anthony, I've trained shoulder to shoulder with you before. You train a lot. 40 hours a week for these folks?
That's a lot. That's a lot of, I mean,
it'll be policy stuff.
Yeah. And it's not even going to be true training, like Jared's saying. It's not going to be range time putting, it's going to be taking random tests, watching dumb videos of basic stuff that's really not going to help you. With this, police squall. Yeah, you'll shoot at like 3, 5, 7 yards or whatever it is. With this law, was it just for teachers? I'm not aware of this
one. It's employees.
This is for all employees,
faculty and staff. Yes,
I think it's funny. Like when you said that the Giffords people are in the stand, like, oh, the blood's on your hands. Maybe I'm missing something. I don't know of any mass incidents or mass shootings or whatever you want to call it, where it was a teacher concealed carry holder who committed that atrocity. So what are they thinking that this is going to skyrocket those? Like, we have an epidemic of that specific type of shooting. I mean, just the logic there, just some of the, like, brain virus dodo birds that are out there.
dodo birds. Yeah, it's a reference from antiquity, folks. We on the Telegraph here talking about the dodo birds.
Dodo birds.
One of the challenges is that anytime these kind of legislation things get talked about, people talk about, oh, it's going to be the Wild West. It's not going to be the Wild West. Here is something that almost nobody is talking about with this Tennessee thing. School teachers carrying that. College teachers, college professors, college staff members and administration, they've been able to be carrying on campus for like a decade. Not a single incident. Nothing has gone on. There are people that carry. There's people that carry on body and off body. And literally nothing has happened. Jared, it's not going to be the Wild West.
No, what they're scared of is that it'll stop these incidents. And they'll all these anti-gun places where they siphon billions of dollars away from people who worry about feelings rather than rights, their industry is at risk because who needs them if there's none of this BS?
I don't know what's going to happen. I do think it's a step in the right direction. People, and a lot of times it's really good for us to just to step in another, not across the aisle. We're just stepping out in the middle of the aisle because the far left, they're a bunch of wackos that want us eating bugs and driving electric cars. But there's a lot of folks, you got to remember, most of middle America is where? In the middle. And there's a lot of folks that just didn't grow up around guns. You know, they raised by a single mom and they didn't have a dad in their life or whatever, because it's usually the guys that are shooting. We know that. Not always, but usually. I have a friend that's never been around guns, seen them on TV, has kids in elementary school. And when I start talking the rhetoric that you and me and Anthony talk about all the time, just our regular stuff, like just like you, how do you meet an armed situation with stronger firepower and you meet it right now? The three of us have done mass shooting training together. And the one thing that stood out for me is just lock the door. Almost no mass shooter has ever opened a door. And that's what's crazy. So just informing ourselves. But when you come to a mom or a dad and they're not comfortable with guns and you immediately say, well, the answer to guns in schools is more guns. That's a big step for them to take. And I have walked a lot. We have a mutual friend, you know, I'm talking about that. I've walked through this and she has flipped the freaking switch. And the thing that got her, and here's my question for you. The thing that got her was when I said, everybody is pro-gun. Everybody calls 911. Instantly, you're calling the cops and saying, get down here, solve the problem. Instead, we take that on. Jared, how do we walk this through with people in the real world? Because us tough guys, we're like, superior firepower. And the left is like, blood on your hands. But for people that don't talk in a weird voice, that are in the middle, how do you reach them and talk to them about guns in schools?
It's tough because you're dealing with a lot of America that's now that's never been in a fist fight. So they don't know that you have to stop the bully. You got to punch the bully in the mouth. Like Mike Tyson's famous quote, like everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. You have to try to get them to understand that the only way to stop that playground bully is to stand up to him. And the only way to stop a mass shooter is to stand up to them. The only way to stop, the gangs of robbers that are just tearing apart our cities is to stand up to them. That's the way it's been throughout time, eons. You pick an empire, and how do you stop the aggressors? You stand up to them. And that's how did we become America, the United States of America? We stood up to the aggressors. It's tough to get through to people, but you got to have those conversations, maybe give them some examples, have some, hard facts of where how many times a year do us concealed carry.
Data doesn't reach people. White middle-aged dudes love talking statistics. I love statistics. You love statistics. Anthony is getting excited just hearing the word statistics. White dudes love statistics, but in the real world, when you're sitting around having pizza with soccer dads, and I've done it for 20 years, statistics don't work. How do you reach soccer mom?
I don't know. I'm going to push back on that because if I follow all of the anti-gun socials, every one of them, and what do they push? Statistics.
To white middle-aged men.
They're pushing it to the black communities more than anybody else.
Oh, really?
Yes. Why? Because if I can get you to read 100,000 times that this one gun took 15 lives and it's that gun's problem, nobody should ever have that gun, you start to believe it because it's, if you hear it enough, it becomes true.
Well, let me be the middle ground person.
Be that middle ground.
Like Tony said, I'll be
California
the
middle ground.
I'll play the middle ground. I think it's a little bit of both that they're good at. But I think I lean a little bit more towards Johnny is that the other side's very, very good at emotion. Now, yes, they use statistics, but how do they use it, Jared? Like we've seen, what is the number one killer of children? Firearms. And they back that with a bunch of statistics that they fudge and create. So, yeah, they use statistics, but it's always to bolster their emotionally charged narrative. Now, I think our side is really, really, really bad at the whole emotional aspect and reaching people, like Johnny said, through the emotion. And I think what you said, Johnny, and like how you approach it is it's a good way. It's getting to the moms and dads through the emotional aspect of it. It's, you know, when your child's life is in danger, would you not want a good guy with a gun there right then and there to protect your child? Would you not want to be there with the most effective tools to your disposal to protect your child? And I think almost every single parent, unless they are a psychopath, would say, yes, I would want that option. So I think sometimes we need to be better at our emotion and our talking points. And sometimes emotion is co-opted too much by our opposition and the Evertowns and the Giffords. They stand on that a lot. But yes, they use statistics, and we have plenty of statistics on our side that we could leverage. But I think sometimes we got to figure out how to package that in a specific talking point to people in a better way.
I think for me, and that this has been a nice talking point for me. And again, I love statistics more than anybody. Jared, you hit on a really good point, or Anthony hit on a really good point in that. Yeah, I think the left uses the statistics, but they're using them to push a narrative. And I think we need to do a better job at that. But for me, it's been a good talking point or a conversation, because it's an exchange. And you got to realize people are scared. It is scary. And they do watch the news and they see this garbage from a different angle than we do. But just to stop and go, you know what? The police are going to be 13 minutes away. They're going to be a long way away, and they might, and I know we make fun of the Uvalde cops, but they might stand in the hallway and hit the hand sanitizer and wipe their hands rather than going into the action. We're on our own out there. And yeah. I think for me, it makes me want to be even more prepared. Jared, how are you preparing these days? What's one thing you're going to do in the coming week to be a little bit better?
I'm heading to range. I'm going to get a couple drills that we got from our friend Reed, because it's been a few weeks since I've been to the range. So I'm going to try some of those single round drills that he taught us and try not to go through 15 boxes of ammo, but use the one, like he said, and then just be able to dial it in by using those skills.
I personally am resetting up my night vision. I'm swapping out from a heavy helmet to a light helmet. I'm going to get that dialed in this weekend. Anthony, I'm going to pick your answer for you before we press record. And it's something we talked about, I think, a month ago, 4 or 5 episodes ago. We talked
face peelers,
the Peruvian face peelers. I'm carrying one of them with me everywhere.
I am carrying a Peruvian face peeler, and I'm going to hold up a Shell gas station with one. All three of us talked about how we're trying to do better, and I am staying out of fast food. I'm doing a lot better, drinking a lot more water. But Anthony, you've been crushing it physically. What have you been doing lately, and why has that been working for you?
It's been a process of just trying to be healthier, and I'm working out more than I ever have. I'm focusing a little less right now on losing weight, more just trying to gain more muscle mass and strength, because I think that's a little bit more effective for me mentally than just always focusing on seeing, like, you know, big number go down on the scale. I'd rather just be huge and strong, and that's kind of the mindset I'm moving towards right now. But one of the things that I'm focusing on recently now is getting more, actually, of course, firearms. That's the big thing of what I do. I train that, but getting back on the mats and doing jujitsu. And what Johnny mentioned too, you know, police are 13 minutes away. I would implore everybody, at least once in your life, go to a grappling gym, go to a jujitsu gym, and put 13 minutes on the clock for a round and grapple for 13 minutes straight. You will not believe how long 13 minutes is. You will die. We do 6-minute rounds at our gym. And at the end of 6 minutes, you're gassed. And then you got to do another one. So 6 minutes alone is a lot. 13 minutes fighting. I mean, you're fighting for your life. Imagine fighting for your life for 13 minutes. That's a long time. So maybe I need to start doing some 13 minute rounds. That'd be a fun little experiment. Maybe I'll start doing that over the next week.
However you found us, we are glad that you did. We call it the Liberty Lounge. We talk about fun. We talk about firearms. We talk about freedom. All of us are going to be waving it out to you. We'll see y'all next time.